Chapter 4. No music in Pastor Charlie Glass's clean American car. The stereo still has that transparent piece of film covering its aqua green fascia. He turns it on occasionally when he's up on the high mountain pass, like today, when he can get WKLM broadcasting out of El Paso, his cousin, the Reverend William Lomax's Old Testament radio hour. He likes to hear Willie wrangling with the sinners who call in, mostly troubled housewives, worried about their children, stuff like that. Willie occasionally has Charlie on as a guest, and boy, is that fun. The feeling of power as that big transmitter blasts your voice all over the state, getting to shout down the callers, girls thinking about having abortions, young men struggling with their sexuality and the like.
And I don't know all what, Reverend. At this bar she goes to with all the young folks,
this housewife's voice is saying, crackly over the FM. Sinners, the Reverend responds simply.
Lord, I know it, Reverend.
Do you read the scripture to your daughter, ma'am?
She's 17. She won't listen to...
Listen to me now. Your daughter will be forever lost unto sin, Willie thunders. Unless she repents now. The good book says...
Pastor Glass, smiling as he listens to his cousin shouting the woman down. Good preparation, he feels, for what he is soon to face. Turning off the 184 now, making a right across the macadam and on to the leafy, narrow, two-lane blacktop that leads southeast down through the mountain. Pulling the shade down, to keep the mid-morning sun from burning through the trees into his eyes.
I'm sorry. I've been weak. I failed her,
the woman sobs. Weakness. They're surrounded by it. Like that old fool sheriff, smiling and nodding and eating his fucking crumb cake and basically saying to Pastor Charles Glass, go fuck yourself. Well, they'll see about that, he thinks. Making a left off the blacktop now, down onto the gravelly, single-track lane, past the old sign that has been there since it was the Hausman place, the one that said Private Road. Below it, idiotically, in jaunty white paint, someone has daubed, All Welcome. He slows and pulls out to pass two people walking hand in hand along the side of the road, their backs to him, a boy and a girl. The girl wearing cut-off denim shorts, so cut-off he can see the goose-flesh white of her buttocks where her tanned legs stop, just below the jagged material. The pastor glances back in the rearview mirror to catch a glimpse at her front. Oh yeah, like he thought. Her breasts swinging in that tight vest top, the deep V of brown cleavage, the guy laughing at something she's saying. The two of them, later or earlier, coiled together on a filthy mattress, her on top of him, grinding, or him behind her, pushing her face hard down into the mattress, the pastor taking the man's place as he... The pastor shakes his head violently from side to side, like someone trying to wake up from a terrible dream, and accelerates away, the couple dwindling in his rearview mirror. He speaks out loud, talking over the radio in the empty car.
Protect me, Father. Keep me from Satan's power.
The words seeming to work, his head clearing and the sick pulse in his groin fading as, up ahead, he sees the wooden gate barring the road, and he pulls up and pushes the button on the intercom.
I'm not too sure where he is, Father. Pete is soon telling him, up at the farmhouse.
Pastor.
Shoot, sorry, pastor. I think he was up on the farm. Was it something specific? I love your sunglasses, by the way. Very chic.
Just a neighborly call.
The pastor smiles stiffly at the thin, simpering young man in a purple tank top.
Well, why don't I see if I can go find him? Have a seat on the porch here. Missing you already,
Pete trills as he trots off around the corner.
The pastor takes a seat on the porch near a huge bearded guy in a filthy combat jacket who is sitting on the deck, shelling peas into a big colander. Music, rock and roll, and cooking smells drift out from the kitchen behind him.
Morning,
the pastor says.
Frag,
Bob twitches.
Frag,
gesturing at the sunshine.
A homo and a retard,
the pastor thinks, smiling back at Bob, brushing a piece of lint from his trousers.
Hey there, a woman's voice comes from the kitchen. How we coming on with them peas?
Her voice growing louder as the question progressed, the woman herself appearing in the doorway now. She was in her 40s, the pastor guessed, and deeply unattractive. Heavy set, with short, cropped hair, work jeans, and stout motorcycle boots. The simpleton held the colander up to her.
Thanks, Bob,
she says, looking the pastor's way as she turns to go back inside.
Good morning, the pastor says.
Oh, hi, Father, Julia says. He lets it go. Is someone taking care of you?
Indeed they are,
the pastor replies, maintaining his smile in the manner of someone holding their breath while wading through a rank, gaseous swamp.
Can I get you anything? Coffee? Soda? Why, no. Thank you all the same.
He watches her walk back into the kitchen, across the room to the range, where another woman, smaller, slighter, similarly dressed, is stirring a large cooking pot. The fat one slips an arm around the cooking woman as she hands her the colander and kisses her on the cheek. The pastor turns back towards the cool October sunshine.
A homo, a retard, and a pair of goddamned dykes. Batting 3 for 3.
He just has time to think as the fag comes back around the corner, trailing in his wake an unkempt blonde-haired man who the pastor recognizes from his newspaper article and his internet browsing.
Found him!
The homosexual trills as they come up onto the porch, the pastor rising, still managing that smile, as the blonde-haired man sticks his hand out and says,
Hi, I'm JC. What's up, man?
There's still a lot to do, Pastor, but we're making a good start. Should hold up to about 30 kids. This'll all be finished by Christmas, Pete reckons. They're walking through the half-built schoolroom, JC giving the good pastor the tour. An autumn breeze blows through the milky polythene, covering the spaces and the timber walls where the windows have yet to be put in. Their footsteps echo hollow in the empty room, JC's battered Converse with Modest Mouse written on them, the pastor's $600 alligator skin loafers. Planks of wood leaning up against work tables, gray electrical wiring spilling out of tears and gouges in the drywall, cans of paint and bags of cement.
Pete?
The pastor asks. Or Carpenter, the fellow who showed you in? We picked Pete up way back in, Kansas, I think. He's HIV positive, and some of your fellow, believers weren't acting too Christian. Pastor Glass nods, inwardly shuddering, remembering that handshake, fearing that this goddamn smile may soon break his face. Anyway, Jesus is saying, you come through here, the pastor following him out and along a narrow, jerry-built hallway, and this corridor, we added this ourselves, by the way, connects back to the main house. We got a couple of offices in here, they pause to look in, a desk with a glowing PC on it, used mainly by Becky, a couple of tattered old fly posters on the wall, Morrissey, shellac, and there, in the corner where the pastor was staring, the gun cupboard. Stout oak with wire mesh screens, the heavy black metal of the rifles visible through the mesh.
I see, the pastor says, stepping into the room, that for all the talk of peace and love, you maintain an armory.
What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? JC thinks, following him in.
It's not exactly an armory, Pastor. We got the rifles for hunting and the handguns and whatnot, Jesus points out, leading the pastor's gaze to the bottom shelf of the cabinet, where over a dozen pistols were haphazardly stacked. The pastor, a keen weapons aficionado, recognizes most of them. Sig Sauers, Smith & Wessons, and Glocks. Revolvers and semi-automatics, 9mm and 38s. Saturday Night Specials, and an $800 German Walther. The semi-automatic assault rifle they took off the Rennet brothers is in there too, along with boxes of various calibers of ammunition.
Well, people just keep showing up with them. We confiscate them, no one's allowed on the property with a personal weapon, and when, if, they leave, they can have them back. They're kept under lock and key at all times. It's just... Jesus tails off, looking at the ugly pile of black and chrome metal. Why, you know? Why the fuck? Excuse my language.
We have the constitutional right to defend ourselves, the pastor says. And as I'm sure you know, the good book teaches us the same. Keep the munition. Watch the way. Make thy loins strong and fortify.
Yeah, yeah. Fortify thy power mightily, JC says, finishing the quotation for him. Nahum 2, verse 1.
You know your Old Testament well, my son.
But Nahum? Really? Come on, pastor.
A couple of thousand out of nearly a million words, and the goddamn NRA retards pick them out and use them to justify keeping themselves armed to the titties forever. Meanwhile, thousands of kids die in gun-related accidental deaths every fucking year. Excuse my French. Anywho, moving along. The pastor takes a moment before he follows, keeping his anger in check, casting another glance over that gun cupboard. And back where we started. The pastor catches up as JC strolls back into the kitchen, the two dykes at the stove, a couple of sweating young men washing at the sink, a few kids running around. There is a sweet herbal smell over and above the cooking, and the pastor notices that one of the young men at the sink is openly smoking a marijuana cigarette.
Jesus!
A little girl shrieks delightedly, running full tilt at him. Matilda, Guff Rennet's daughter, 8 or 9 years old. Jesus scoops the kid up and whirls her around while she howls delightedly. He throws her onto the floor and rips her t-shirt up, burying his face in her brown belly and blowing raspberries into her while she screams with laughter. The pastor watches uncomfortably, his hands thrumming in his pockets.
You got kids, pastor?
Jesus is asking him from the floor.
More!
The kid shrieks.
Two,
the pastor replies.
Fun, ain't they? Jesus says.
Indeed,
the pastor says, looking away. Here, JC knew at once, was a man who had never roughhoused with his children, who had never thrown them on their backs and buried his face in their flesh, a man whose own father would probably have been more likely to run naked down Main Street than to have interacted physically with his children, someone who was nothing less than emotionally crippled.
Is that, the pastor says, is she your daughter?
Hell no, Jesus says. This is Matilda. Say hi to the pastor, Maddie.
No!
Maddie screams. Children, their instinctive talent for sensing those talentless with children.
You got time to stay for lunch, pastor? What we having today, girls?
Vegetable curry,
Julia says over her shoulder.
I'm afraid not,
the pastor replies. Guff Rennet strides in. It is not a happy stride.
Hi, Guff, Jesus says. This is Pastor Glass. Pastor, Guff Rennet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, happy goddamn campers in here, huh?
Guff cuts in, seeing Julia and Amanda and JC all together in the kitchen.
Maddie, come on. We're out of here.
We're playing,
Maddie says, hiding behind JC's leg. You going up to Brunsville? JC says.
We're going home. For good,
Guff says. Little Maddie starts to cry.
Look, man, come on.
So we had, JC says.
Maddie, get your ass over here now,
Guff says, ignoring him.
crying, doing that slow kid crying walk, Maddie reluctantly makes her way across the room towards her father. Jesus fights the urge to give the kid a hug, tell her it'll be okay. Guff, he says instead, we can work this out, can't we?
Get fucked, you freak, Guff says. My brother's gonna stay on a while, get that pickup sold, get some of their shit straightened out. But we're out of here.
He throws his crying daughter over his shoulder and stomps on out. Silence for a moment. Julia stirs that curry. The pastor clears his throat. Jesus sighs. See, pastor? Hardly a utopia now, is it? The pastor says. Well, come on then, Jesus says. I'll give you a tour of the farm before you go.